Welcome. This is Dave Schmidt, and I'm here with Joe Antwell for another conversation, primarily focused on COVID and the vaccines associated with COVID and all other matters. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Dave? Well, glad, good to have you back in the States.
Great. Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. So, we now have another vaccine that has popped or what is claimed to be a vaccine that has popped onto the stage, and this is the Johnson & Johnson product. I, like many others, I hesitate to call them vaccines. They're certainly non-traditional, if we call it that. It is a vaccine that, unlike the Moderna and the Pfizer products, is based on DNA in a viral particle called an adenovirus. So the recall that the Moderna and the Pfizer products were based upon inserting another type of nucleic acid and a RNA nucleic acid into the cells using a lipid coating around those RNA molecules. But in this case, we have a full-fledged virus, the adenovirus, which is introduced via injection into a muscle. And the idea then is that those virus particles will insert at least a fragment of what was the adenovirus DNA, to which has been added a DNA segment that will code for some relevant immunogenic portion of that spike protein associated with the coronavirus. And by immunogenic, I mean that it is hoped to stimulate an immune response by the host body against that spike protein of the coronavirus. And so, first of all, we have this document. It's the emergency use authorization document from Johnson & Johnson in association with a company called Janssen Biotech. And this document is not the full-blown application for approval of this product by the FDA, but rather, as the title suggests, it's a kind of by the seat of your pants quickie job that is provided for by the federal government. And a woman by the name of Woodcox last week, we've heard on NPR talking about the fact that the emergency use authorization doesn't include lots and lots of data that goes into the development of the vaccine or its both safety and efficacy. And she rather, I thought, cavalierly brushed this off in her conversation with the NPR interviewer, saying that most people really don't care about that anyway. Well, guess what? If you're listening to the show, I'm assuming you care about it, and so do we. So, Joe, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, the document that Janssen, which is owned by Johnson & Johnson, it's a biotech company they own, it puts forward the results of the trial that it conducted, particularly relating to both effectiveness and then to some extent to safety. So in terms of effectiveness, the document primarily focuses on preventing mild symptoms. So it describes the symptoms as, you know, headaches, chills, just general feeling of malaise. And of course, the public is weighing the effects of the vaccine against the effects of the COVID virus that it prevents. I mean, this is the wager that is being made by someone who's taking the vaccine, that they will have a better chance for health than if they don't. Sure. And so the first thing that really is glaring about
a cost-benefit analysis.
It's a cost-benefit analysis that every human has to make who takes the vaccine. So the first thing that comes across is that the actual declared adverse reactions to the vaccine in a group of, say, every 100 would be as often and perhaps worse than what the COVID illness would cause to this group. So it's kind of strange that when you just compare one group of adverse effects to the other, that the vaccine appears to be just on that level of producing more negative results than if you would get the COVID. Now,
maybe for the listeners' interest, if they do want to download this document and check out what we're talking about, it's called the Emergency Use Authorization, EUA, for an unapproved product review memorandum. And of course, you would put in application. I'll give you the application number. It's 27205 Janssen Biotech. And on page 31, you can find a graph relevant to what Joe is talking about here. It's a graph that purports to show the positive effects of what they call vaccination upon these mild symptoms, or what moderate to severe COVID symptoms. And what you'll see is on the left side of the graph, on the vertical axis, you'll see that their cumulative incidence goes up to about 3.5%, and that the vaccine-treated individuals accumulate some incidence of some kind of event, a mild one, not death for sure, some type of moderate to severe reaction at about roughly half the rate of those who are in a placebo group. But note that we're talking about the difference between about 1.5% and 3%. So this is what they're basing an efficacy of a significant amount when really it's just a small number of cases out of all of those tested.
Yeah, one thing that people should be aware of is how they fiddle with the numbers. In other words, so they say that the vaccine produces, in this case, between 70% and 90% effectiveness, depending on how you're looking at the numbers. Now, that seems impressive, but when you look at the actual numbers of people acquiring COVID, out of 1,000 people during the time period they're talking about, it is just 0.5% that is actually. So in other words, instead of five people, coming down with it, like a smaller number out of 1,000, if you look at it of the units of being a percentage of the total amount, rather than just comparing the people who got COVID from the people who did not get COVID, then the numbers change dramatically, and you can see that that you're really getting, say, like a half of a percent advantage in terms of not getting COVID, which is the number you need really to relate to against the reaction to the vaccine that people are getting, because many more people are getting reactions against the vaccine out of 1,000 people getting the vaccines than who are actually avoiding getting COVID. So this is the first thing, is they kind of jimmy the statistics to create the best profile for them. And that is wrong, because it doesn't enable people to make an informed decision about whether or not to take it. But the part that is really troubling, and you and I have discussed this, is that they claim that the vaccine is effective against mortality.
Yes.
Now, this is the part that is really, it's not just, kind of an advertisement use of numbers. It's just outright deceitful, because they claim that they had 7 fatalities from COVID in the placebo group. They said, right, this is, we had 7 fatalities and we had none in the vaccine.
So for the listener, the placebo group would be that group that did not receive the test injection.
Right. And so they now, amazingly, all 7 deaths that they claim occurred in South Africa. They had 3 groups where they studied the vaccine. One was the United States. That contained 50% of the population. The other was Brazil, which contained 40%. And then the third cohort, which is by far the smallest, was South Africa, which had 10% of the people. The total trial was 40,000. So you had about 4,000 people in South Africa. I think, actually, excuse me, 5,000. And 2,500, these are approximate numbers, were in the placebo group. So in this group, they claim that they had 7 deaths. Now, first of all, it's extremely bizarre and requiring an explanation that all of the deaths occurred in South Africa, because of the 3 cohorts, South Africa is one the smallest by far of them, and also it has the lowest rate of fatality per million people of the 3 cohorts. So the first question is, how did this happen? How is this possible that the smallest group and the area that has the least fatalities by COVID would be the group that produced all of the deaths? This makes no sense. It requires an explanation. But that isn't the really deceitful part of it. The part that I really wanted to get to is that they then go on and say that since they didn't have any deaths in the vaccine.
By the way, for the listener, you can find this statement on page 34 of that document.
Right. And the statement, which is certainly that they say that the results suggest that the vaccine is efficacy against mortality associated with COVID-19. In other words, they're saying that the 7 deaths occurred in the placebo, 0 occurred in the vaccination. So therefore, we have an effective treatment or something that prevents fatalities. But
right.
This
and just to drive something home here too, on page 22, you can see that for South Africa, the virus, the treatment group that received the injection was 3,286, and the placebo group, nearly equal to that, was 3,290 in numbers.
Yeah, I had the numbers like wrong. Anyway, thank you for the correct. Now, okay, so they say that so therefore the vaccine, they claim, has some data to suggest that it's effective against mortality. And right. This statement then has been repeated in the press. This very statement comes, you'll see it being quoted again and again. Now, this statement is clearly simply incorrect, because not only is it like a number that would just defy common sense, but it isn't the correct number to use, because the correct number to use for a placebo group would be the number that is already in existence, not the outlier that they claim happened during the 39 days of the trial. The known rate of mortality in South Africa over a year is 853 per million people. Now, that would give you a number of mortality in this group of 3,200 of less than 1. Less than 1. And that's the number they should have been using. They don't need to have the placebo group come up with these seven deaths. The placebo group is the placebo group. It's not supposed to be related to anything other than it's just there to give you a background in terms of reaction to the vaccine. So they used this number of seven deaths that they claim occurred in the 39 days within the placebo group and ignored completely the fact that, first of all, the number is not a real number in terms of how the smallest group with the smallest fatality rate would produce all seven deaths. But they don't even mention that the rate of mortality would have been for all of the placebo group in South Africa for an entire year, given a result of less than one death. And if they'd used the real number, then the whole idea that the vaccine can claim to be effective against mortality would be thrown out the window, and all they would have left would be, well, the vaccine prevented these very mild symptoms, but it also caused symptoms in a greater amount that appeared to be even worse than the ones that it prevented.
Well, yeah. So if you look at the table on the next page, page 35, table 19, you can see that they drill down a little bit more on these seven deaths. And six of the seven are obese individuals, and about two-thirds of them have either hypertension, diabetes, or heart disease. And so any researcher looking at this this bit of data would say it's not likely that we've achieved a representative sample here. I mean, we have 221 nations in the world, and we're essentially cherry picking this number out. They discovered this number for fatality. They discovered it after the fact, so it's a post hoc. Observation, you know. So,
I wanted to just conclude, you know, my thoughts on this with they also had, in fact, a death in the vaccinated group.
Yes.
But the problem is that since it came on only 10 days after vaccination, they decided to remove it because they were looking at the effects of the vaccine from 14 days out. But the fact is, if you compare the death that in fact occurred in the vaccine cohort, which one of which was the one individual who had that had the onset of the illness 10 days after his vaccination, to the number that the cohort that is placebo would produce just naturally, Dave, it would be exactly the same. You would have the one death in the side of the vaccination or and have, 0.7 or less than one death on average in the group that was the placebo. So in other words, there was no difference whatsoever, none, between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated in terms of mortality. It is just, manipulation, and it is propaganda trying to get people to take a vaccine when the study does not mention one other thing, Dave, and I'd like you to comment on this. There is potential for all sorts of disorders because of long-term from the vaccine, which such a short trial could not pick up. So in other words, not only do the vaccinated individuals get no benefit, at least we can, from which you can look at a real, a clear-minded reading of the data, but they have a additional risk of disorders from the vaccine, which have not been confirmed to be non-existent by long-term safety trials.
Well, right, and if you look at adverse reactions, where is it? It's table. It's the one that essentially shows that that the adverse reactions center around these thrombogenic and embologenic events, that is, clotting. So a thrombus is a stationary clot, and embolism is a mobile clot where pieces have broken off and plugged themselves into a smaller artery somewhere. And this is on page 47, table 29, and you can see 15 events or so, almost all related to deep vein or pulmonary embolism, cerebral infarction, which essentially means a thrombus or an embolus in the brain, strokes, hemiparesis, half paralyzation, almost certainly due to a little stroke of some sort, or maybe a large stroke of some sort. And, you know, and then you have some similar things going on in the placebo groups, but you see three acute myocardial infarctions, heart attacks.
Yeah, you have three versus about 15, so it's five times greater in the vaccine group of the embolism. And by the way, Dave, this is no longer just a theoretical concern. There's 15 countries that have pulled not this vaccine, but another one, because it produced thrombosis. So you can see that there is really a factual negative risk to your health by taking the vaccine that you need to weigh against its benefits.
Yeah, unless they're willing to make the argument thrombus induced events are protecting people against heart attacks.
Well, I mean, that would be kind of a far fetched, but they could at least try that. So anyway, I think that I don't think that this study is presented objectively, and perhaps the public shouldn't expect that. I mean, these are a pro profit business. They're trying to sell a product. So perhaps you should always read these kind of things with a bit of a jaundiced eye, you know, for the fact that you're dealing with advertisement to some extent.
Well,
but just as they present it, as they present it, Dave, there is no argument here to take the vaccine. If someone who reads this, their own document, the document that Johnson & Johnson puts out, should look at this and go, you know, I there's no way I would take this vaccine.
Well, and you know, I think, as I keep stressing, I'm not a virologist or a immunologist, but last fall we had a physician who is he was a highly placed decision maker in the world of viral epidemiology and decision making about what vaccines would be formulated, a doctor by the name of Wodarg. And then there was the former chief science officer of Pfizer, for goodness sakes. I mean, my hat is off to this guy, even if he is retired. And his name was Dr. Yeadon, Yeadon. And both of them filed legal documents attempting to stay the implementation of, I believe it was the Moderna, maybe Moderna and Pfizer, I don't know, products last fall. And they have many of the concerns that we have in terms of potential harm to the immune system, autoimmune diseases, potential damage to the reproductive system, the placenta formation in females. And so when individuals like this, the former professor of microbiology and immunology from Germany, who are raising these concerns, you can tell that what's occurring is that there's a whole layer of scientists out there that you're not hearing about, and only these few are penetrating through this wall that has been created, a totalitarian wall that you have to admit is extremely effective, because it utilizes the media, the social media, academia, government, industry, advertising, everything, banking. They have a unified system that can control the message and hide the dissident voices.
Yeah. Did you hear the interview that was on Dell Bigtree's High Wire of Dr. Gert Vandenbosch?
No, I haven't.
I send it to you as a link. You can listen to it. It's absolutely chilling. The most important, or one important part, is that this individual, Dr. Vandenbosch, is the individual who he's a very vaccine promoting individual. He has been in charge of almost all of, at one time or another, almost all of the vaccine producing biological companies in the world. I mean, he literally is, you can argue, the most senior authoritative expert on vaccines in the world. He is not an anti-vaxxer at all, just the opposite. Right. And in the interview, he said that this vaccine basically has the potential to destroy the human race and has to be stopped immediately. And I would hope that everyone listen to this interview of Dr. Gert Vandenbosch, that has been produced by, or has been put out by, in the U.S. by, Dell Bigtree and his website, thehighwire.com, because, he just goes into many of the things that Dave has explained to me, and has, you know, and is, because of his background, this should be front page news on every single media outlet in the world. And yet it's almost impossible to find the interview. This is going to Dave's point about this totalitarian wall against real information. So please, anyone who hears this interview and is wanting to have another opinion from perhaps the leading expert in the world in vaccines, listen to Dr. Vandenbosch's interview, because it's almost surrealistic.
We're hearing some pushback on criticisms from our sector, our skepticism sector, regarding whether these so-called vaccines are interfering or changing our DNA. If I can just do a quick song and dance on that. Sure. As we have said from the beginning, mRNA as those Moderna and Pfizer vaccines were designed, it is true that the mRNA is not affecting the DNA. However, it is the case that there are retroviruses, and we just that can infect the cells in parallel with what's going on, and that at the very least there are natural mechanisms whereby it's imaginable that RNA could be picked up and then inserted, as retroviruses do, so I call it reverse engineered form of DNA into the host DNA. That's one mechanism. And in fact, there are retroviruses that are used specifically in industry to insert recombinant DNA into the host DNA. And there, the adenovirus, which is Johnson & Johnson is based upon, the Janssen product is based on, the adenovirus was initially looked at in the 80s and 90s as a vehicle for doing gene therapy and therefore incorporating novel DNA into the host DNA. Now, it turns out it looks like there are better viral vehicles for doing that. The retrovirus that I mentioned, the lentivirus, and then the adenovirus-associated viruses look like those are better tools, if that's your goal, of inserting DNA permanently into the cell. So, yeah, Joe and I and many others understand that these particular products that are being rushed through in this Operation Warp Speed, they may not be the final rollout of a potentially hazardous or maybe even maliciously intended insertion of DNA into our genome. But this is clearly the threat. I would not 20 years ago have been so concerned about this. In fact, I even had ideas of my own about how this technology could be applied in the nervous system. However, I'm becoming a bit more seasoned about the kind of players that are actually out there and what their motivations are. And so it is not a silly question for us to be asking. And the mechanisms really do exist for altering genes. I mean, this is what genetic engineering is about, for goodness sakes. So we shouldn't be pretending as though, oh my gosh, that's not even possible to consider. When in fact, these very large forces that we're facing have demonstrated in other sectors of our life, whether it's banking, entertainment, government. I mean, just look at this last election in the United States. They have proven themselves to be entirely willing to operate by deception, incrementalism, progressivism, and then shield themselves with multiple layers of bureaucratic, the bureaucratic engine for creating lies and disinformation.
Yep, well said. And I would point out that my opinion in terms of the DNA altering aspect is that it's a straw man. It's irrelevant. Look, the fact is your immune system is permanently changed, and it's changed by a genetically modified procedure. These are the facts. You have the spike protein artificially created in your cells, to which your immune system will now and forever, evidently, have to deal with, have to do something about.
That's now, right. And so just to underscore what you said, in other words, for the listening audience, what all of these systems, the Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca systems involved is changing the coat on the human cells, changing it by embedding a protein that makes those cells look like the COVID virus.
Yeah.
Do you get that, folks? I mean, the intent is for the immune system to react against those presentations, that cloaking, what's the word I want? That sort of makeup, that cosmetic makeup change to the cells that make it look like a coronavirus. And why would you want to do that? I mean, the potential for disaster down the road is immense.
Well, we have seen in the original trials, the trials that occurred at 2002, 2004, when they had the SARS MERS issue and they're trying to come up with mRNA and DNA type technologies to create vaccines, that they did animal trials, which they didn't do in the case of the vaccines that they're putting out now. And in those cases, the animal trials showed that it was a disaster. The animals started to die, not immediately, but the immune response over time, when they were exposed to other viruses, became catastrophic. So for me, if you want to introduce this technology into the human race, you have to have really long-term trials showing that there is no chance that there will be some unforeseen response from the immune system to this permanent change that you're bringing about. So since they don't have anything in terms of animal trials for safety, you have to say no to this vaccine. I was asked by someone who had taken it why I didn't want to take it when, you know, and they were saying, well, are you comfortable getting COVID? And I said, no, I don't really want to get COVID. I actually am not particularly concerned about it. I know that 99.74% of the people recover from it who don't live in retirement homes. And then I'm more worried about stubbing my toe on a sprinkler than I am about COVID, but that's just me. But this isn't why I'm not taking the vaccine. I'm not taking the vaccine because the animal trials are not concluded yet. Yeah. And the person blinked at me and goes, what are you talking about? And I said, the animal trials aren't done. And she said, well, where are they? And I said, you're the animal trial.
Yeah, and they're not likely to be done.
No. And I'm just going to, but I will wait at least a decade to see how you do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you know, and something I think that we should devote a show to in the near future is the absolute unwillingness of most people to want to engage this topic. They yeah. want to change to a channel with good news. They don't want to hear this. The details overwhelm them. I don't know, maybe a student of communications and broadcasting would know better, but it seems to me that the attention span of most people in the public, probably worldwide, has been reduced to about 15 seconds or yeah. maybe 30 at the outer edge. And really what you need is to be able to sit at home in your leather chair and listen to these discussions that take maybe an hour at a time, and then to sit and read even a good old time newspaper account would be better than what we're getting now. And you know, this is the problem, is that the masters of communication have learned how to reduce things to blurbs on Facebook or those detestable forms of news broadcasting on Yahoo and MSNBC and mainstream media.
Well, our Facebook fact checking, which
yes.
they just completely create a one sided image of the image that they want. You're just in a world of propaganda. You know, I think that. And I just want to thank you, Dave, for the service you do, bringing your expertise. It's really helped me understand our situation. And I think that the more people listen to your concerns, the more awake they will become. I would also hope that everyone listens to the interview that Dr. Gert Vandenbosch, who, as I said, credentials are simply not just impeccable, but what I would think would be the world's finest, and his call to concern, is literally absolute. He is saying in this interview, he talks about the possibility of wiping out the human race with these vaccines. He says that they are that misapplied. They are that dangerous. Listen to this individual, Dr. Gert Vandenbosch. And listen to Dave Schmidt. You're dealing with real experts who have no bone to pick. They aren't on Bill Gates's. Actually, I think Vandenbosch is on Gates's payroll, but he didn't care. He just came out and said the truth. But I know in your case you're not, or I'm not aware of. Anyway, so listen to this other side and engage your own human intellects to try to come up with a better decision, because taking the vaccines is a permanent change. You can't go back after you've done it.
Right. And so today in the news, we see that Joe Biden, the pretender for the presidency, in my opinion, is saying that by July 1st, if we're good, you know, maybe we'll be allowed to open up if we all get the vaccine. And also by May 1st, he wants everybody to be eligible for the vaccine. Well, guess what, Mr. Biden? I don't really care about your eligibility status that you plan on conferring on me. And so, no serious scientist would ever do an experiment where he or she would, at the outset, plan on applying a treatment to every individual in the population available. Let's say you studied pine trees and the infestation of pine trees by some bug, and you thought you had a pesticide for that. Well, as your first experiment, you wouldn't try to find every pine tree in the world and spray it with your pesticide. But that's precisely exactly what they're planning on doing.
That's why we know we must suspect malevolence. We have to be concerned about it, because this isn't a normal process that's being, you know, rolled out in terms of the scientific literature or the scientific process. This really smacks of population reduction, population control. Right. I thought Biden's speech was the creepiest thing I've ever seen on television. Where he actually was saying that you can have a barbecue on July 4th, Independence Day, if we all take the vaccine. But then he went on to say, you know, you have to remember you won't be able to have a large group of people for your barbecue. You know, you're going to have you have to be in a small group. In other words, underlying the governmental control over your life is just going to go on forever. It was so horrible, Dave, that I thought at the end of it, Biden would launch into an advertisement for hamburgers to eat at the barbecue made by Bill Gates's artificial meat products. I mean, it was just disgusting. And the fact that a freedom-loving nation would listen to something like that from this brain-dead individual is just it's a call to arms. You know, we have to start becoming more alert, more aggressive.
Yeah, you know, and these, back in the, 69 or something, when the CIA came out with that very effective white paper on labeling anyone who raised questions about the Kennedy assassination as conspiracy theorists, to use as a weaponized tool.
Yeah.
This has played itself out now in such deleterious ways, and it's people like us and the people in this community, the skeptic community, who are able to look at this and apply skills that you can see. Oh, that any detective would use, spiritual director using the Ignatian methods for the discernment of spirits, laboratory or field scientist, any economist who was worth their weight would look at this and say, I see something. The suspect just told me a big, big lie, or even a little lie. Why would they lie? I want to look into the rest of their story.
Yeah.
So when you see these things that Bill Gates is doing the things that they will tell you, I mean, they're in the, we've mentioned them before, these documents from the Rockefeller Foundation, or is it Big New Brzezinski? I mean, they tell you up front what they plan on doing, folks. This is not cockamamie ideas that we're having because we had a fever. I mean, they're telling us what they want to do. Just put the two together.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to thank you, Dave, for taking the time to have this discussion with me. I'm sure we're going to have another one this week. There's so much to talk about. You know, everyone just try to be alert. Listen to Dave's information as the podcasts come out. We are all getting an education, and it's a quick one that we have to really, you know, take to heart so we can defend ourselves. Thank you so much, Dave, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Joe.
All right.
You have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.